Welcome back in. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN. So we just heard from Troy LaRavier from the Chicago Principals and Administrators Association. He had a lot of strong words for CPS and for Mayor Lightfoot and the way this was handled. But our friend Heidi Stevens had a different way of looking at it. She wrote a great article about it this week, and she joins us on the phone right now. Hey, Heidi, how are you?
Hey, Matt. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for jumping on. You wrote a piece this week that I really enjoyed where you said basically, hey, let's not worry about how we got to this decision. It wasn't the easiest decision to make. We had to take they had to take the time to figure this out. Troy was arguing a few minutes ago when he was on with us that we just wasted a whole summer, that they could have been planning for better ways to handle the remote learning. But that is, and I, as I said to him, I said, they're a devil's advocate. That's not the easiest decision to make. And so as a CPS parent, you're okay with how things ended up and how they got to this point?
I am, and I wouldn't necessarily characterize myself as disagreeing with him. First of all, I didn't hear everything he said, but you know, I sympathize with any educator who now has to scramble to come up with 100% remote learning when they were scrambling to come up with hybrid learning. And you know, I mean, for example, we got an email from my son's school with, you know, an incredibly detailed hybrid learning options spelled out for us, down to like what instruments band kids would be allowed to play and what instruments they wouldn't. So a lot of care and thought and energy and time went into that hybrid planning, and now it's tossed out the window. And I'm certainly sympathetic to anyone who says, like, hey, A, you know, thanks for wasting our time, and B, we could have been using that time to create, you know, the best 100% remote learning plan if we knew ahead of time that that's what we should be doing. So I get all that, and I definitely agree that it's, you know, this whole thing is a problem. It's a huge problem.
Sure. Well, but you made a great argument. You made a great argument in your column that it's not as simple as just remote learning or not. We have to take into account the diverse student body that we have here in Chicago, that ginormously diverse student body. And for some kids, you wrote, being at school is the safest place they can be. So it's not easy to just say, hey, just stay home and do it there, because it's not just about the learning. It's about everything else going on in their life.
Well, exactly. And so, you know, for starters, we didn't know the science and data at the beginning of the summer, what, you know, what the positivity rate would be, what the new cases would be come September. We have a little better idea now. So they did need to, in my mind, wait a little while before making the decision. Second of all, as you just said, CPS has about 355,000 students, and those students have a really, really wide range of needs and backgrounds and realities that they're grappling with, right? And so remote learning is easier to access for some kids than others, and home is a safer place for some kids than others, and violence is the reality even inside the home for some students, and that, of course, is true outside of Chicago as well. Child abuse is not unique to the city. Violent neighborhoods are not unique to the city, but that is a reality that the CPS leaders and the mayor had to grapple with. So I don't blame them at all for hoping and trying to get kids back in classrooms. Kids need to be in classrooms. I mean, they absolutely do. Remote learning is a pale comparison to in-person learning. And that's even for kids who are privileged with safe, sort of, you know, climate-controlled, comfortable homes and all of the best devices. I mean, it's not a great setup. So I don't blame them at all for taking into consideration, you know, the hugely disparate needs and realities of the CPS population, and floating a hybrid plan and seeing if that would work for starters. And I'm also glad that they pivoted to remote. I think that, you know, for the safety of their students and teachers and staff and the family members and community members of the students, teachers, and staff, sticking with remote, you know, for the first 9 weeks is the way to go.
What do you think about how that's going to play out? You know, you went through this in the spring, and it was kind of sprung on everybody in the spring. It was, you know, you couldn't expect too much, and I think everybody felt that that's kind of what they got. Do you feel good about what your kids will get? Do you think the teachers will have enough time to figure this out, or are you going to promise to be patient with the whole process and we'll all get through it together?
Both. Everything you just said. So I'm going to do my best to be patient. And, you know, with with my kids, with their teachers, with myself, it's not ideal. It's not, I mean, kids should be in classrooms. They should be in hallways with other people their age. They should be having spontaneous, like, laughter and crushes and inspiration and mind opening and stuff that doesn't happen on a screen. And I'm ticked, frankly, that we haven't as a country gotten to a place where that's possible. So I don't love this situation that we're all in. I actually kind of hate it. But I'm going to do my best to help my kids through it and any other kids that I can help in any way I can, whether that's obviously like donating to tech fundraisers to close the tech gap in Chicago or whatever, we're all going to find our ways to help where we can. I don't know. I mean, the spring was bad for my son, especially, who was in fifth grade. He just did not connect with remote learning. He just, you know, at some point he tuned out, and that was partly my fault. I was trying to work, you know, from home, a regular full-time sure. job, and also teach another kid where I could. And so he needed a lot more guidance than I think I understood him to need. The teachers were thrown into this without a lot of planning. I'm hoping the fall is a little better, but it's a tough thing. It's a tough thing for teachers to find a way to engage and inspire kids, you know, on a screen.
It's such a tough situation, I think, because if we could go back, if we could just time travel back 3 months from now or 3 months back, and we're, you know, there's a lot of different arguments for why the kids should be in school. One of, and I understand parents have to work, and so it's hurting the economy, and so there's a higher level, like, well, you got to get them in school so all the parents can work. I get that. But when we talk about the kids, and because it like you said, we want them to experience everything they're supposed to be experiencing right now. The social interaction is such an important part of this part of their life. But in the end, I think if we went back 3 months, we'd say they can deal for a year. Let's not drag this into 2 years because we keep trying to push them back and do all these things. And if we could have just said, you know, I guess if as a country we could have said, let's all shelter in place for a month, the entire country, maybe we'd be in a much better place. All of these things we can look back and say we should have done. But I just wish we'd go back. We need to step back and look at, like, yes, it's terrible that they're not going to get this interaction. I feel so terrible for the seniors from last year and now probably the seniors of this year who are missing out on what should be some of the greatest times of their lives, prom and graduation, all those things those poor kids missed out on in 2020, and who knows what's going to happen in 2021. But in the end, when we look back 20 years from now, I don't think a lot of us will say, my kid was never the same after that year he had remote learning, especially if we would have been able to plan a little more for it and say, okay, this is just how it's going to be. Let's figure out how to make the best of it and make it interactive and make it more fun and just all embrace that you are part of the craziest time in history for the lifetime of any of us who are living right now.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And you know, I joke with my husband, our kids are going to say, like, I grew up in Chicago in the 20s. Like, it's going to be, you know, the thing, like, growing up in Berkeley in the 60s or something. And this isn't specific to Chicago, but that's where my kids are growing up. But I do think, like, living through 2020 or maybe the entire 20s will be a thing. I also think, to your point, you know, that's a lot of why I'm glad CPS made the decision that they did make, because I think the longer we drag our feet on just staying the heck home whenever possible, the longer this virus is going to take to contain. And ideally, you know, I don't think we're going to be able to wait for a vaccine to have kids back in school and have the economy sort of mostly open back up. Once there is a vaccine, it's going to take a while to convince a lot of people to get it. In other words, we're going to be dealing with kids in school buildings while COVID is still a reality, I think. Most yeah. experts say that we will. But, you know, maybe keeping the schools closed, at least in the biggest district in the state and one of the biggest districts in the country, for 9 more weeks, or maybe 18 more weeks, we'll see in November. Maybe that gets us back in school more quickly than if we went ahead and started September 8th inside buildings, and then you start spreading it to more people, and then you're shutting down, and then it's, you know, it's almost like you know, one step forward, two step back.
That's the thing that seems so crazy to me about it, is the idea that, because I know that, and every district seems to have a different plan. I was saying earlier that the grade school my kids graduated from last year, the Catholic grade school, they're going like half days this year. So they're going to be there every single day, but they're not going to do lunch and they're not going to do art and music. And so they're just going to shorten up all their time together. I don't know how well that's going to work. And every school seems, and district seems to have a different plan until they finally decide to just go all remote. And so it's just going to be very interesting to see how that all plays out and where that ends up. And like you said, so the plans I heard of where kids were going 2 days and then everybody's remote on Wednesday and then the other half of the class on the other 2 days. But I believe the teachers were there every one of those days. It wasn't like there were two teachers for each class, and so they weren't there the other day. So that teacher is going to interact with everybody. And I feel like I know we're limiting the amount of spreaders we have, but we're not like completely eliminating them. And I, you know, once one person got it in one of those classrooms, that whole class was going to have to be out for 14 days. It seems like that would just be a rigmarole that every school would go through ad nauseum. And it just made sense to finally say, okay, that's going to get crazy. Let's just go remote and for a while and, you know, do the best we can.
Yeah. Well, for my son's school and my son and daughter are both in CPS, but in different schools, because my daughter's going into high school and my son's just going into sixth grade. For my son's school, the hybrid plan said that the teachers would not actually be in the same classroom as the kids. They were going to be in some sort of like protected room where they could see the kids, but they wouldn't be sharing the room with them. And my understanding was that was to avoid the situation that you're talking about.
Well, that makes complete sense. How are they going to do that? They're going to build penalty boxes in each class that the teachers would be in?
The idea was that, so like my son would be in a pod of 15 kids, and then, you know, his friend Ben would be in a pod of 15 other kids, and the teacher would be teaching both of those pods and every other pod of sixth graders, but not physically in front of them, so that if one kid tested positive in a pod, only that pod would have to quarantine, not the teacher and all the other pods that teacher came in contact with. I can't physically picture it,
yeah.
And I don't know if other schools were going to try to do that same thing, but it also honestly helped me decide to keep him 100% remote even before CPS pivoted to 100% remote, because I thought, well, what the heck is it? Why would I send him into a building to be taught by a teacher who won't be in the same room with him? He could be in my house and learn from a teacher who's not going to be in the same building with him. So it's incredibly complex. I do think CPS tried to do the very best they could with the hand they were dealt.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, they've made a great decision Wednesday to go remote. But
so that's interesting, Heidi. I didn't know that you were going to opt out originally. So for your son who's going into sixth grade, what was that conversation like, and how much of that was mom deciding versus him being able to say, you know, that's very tough for a parent because you've got to decide what's best. But did you make that a conversation, or did you make that, here's how we're going to handle this?
It was a conversation. It was ongoing, and we started it sort of at the beginning of the summer. And he went back and forth on whether he wanted to go back or not. I ultimately told him last week when we got this survey that we had to fill out, there was a survey that was due, you know, before CPS changed to remote. They asked every family to send their response in by this coming Friday, August 7th, saying whether they would opt into the hybrid plan or keep their kids home. And so I was like, look, I got to answer the survey. You know, I don't want to send you back to school. How do you feel about that? And
at first he thought that meant he didn't have to go to school at all. So he's like, sweet, Mom, we'll have so much fun. This will be great.
Yeah. He hated remote learning, and he wants to see his friends, you know. I'll be honest, a big part of what had me nervous about him being in school was obviously exposure to the virus, obviously exposing his teachers to whatever, you know, him and my family would be bringing into the building. Obviously, I don't want to get anyone else sick. I also feel a little bit of a responsibility to use my privilege in the sense that I have a job that can be done from home, and I can physically keep my kid home in a way that someone who's, you know, for example, a nurse or a doctor or a grocery store worker or a mail carrier can't. Yeah. You know, I could keep the numbers down by keeping my kid home. I wanted to exercise that privilege. Anyway, another big part of it for me was, like, just the anxiety and fear of him, you know, going to school every day wondering, like, am I going to get sick and die? Or am I going to get one of my friends sick and die? Or my teachers sick and die? And the, I worried about how that would be handled among the staff. You know, all it takes is one sort of frustrated adult to say the wrong thing, like, you know, put your mask on. You want to kill your mom? Like, we had so many visions of, like,
did he express concern about that? Do you feel like you're putting that's inside your head, or do you think that he was really sort of dealing with those issues and you could read the tea leaves there?
So a little bit of both. Like, last year during the spring, when people were starting to talk about coronavirus, he was telling me stories about kids teasing and bullying a little bit other kids. Like, coronavirus was the new cooties, right? So, like, at recess, instead of, you know, like, they'd play tag, but, like, if you got tagged, then you had coronavirus. And there were kids who were crying and really upset and really scared. And, like, one girl had to go home because she was sobbing so hard because someone told her she had coronavirus.
Oh, my gosh.
She was afraid she was going to die. And this was, like, you know,
this is before it even got crazy.
March,
yeah, this is at the beginning.
Americans had died.
Oh, my gosh.
So a little bit of it is me extrapolating, like, February and March's experience, and then adding, like, where America is right now.
Yeah.
And coming up with what I imagine the fall to be like. And imagining if I'm a grown-up, if I'm an adult in a building with a whole bunch of kids and they're not wearing their dang masks or washing their hands or staying 6 feet apart, and you're sort of like, okay, I got to go home to my elderly parents, or I got to eat a lot. Like, of course, at some point, someone's going to lose their cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, I started feeling like I could avoid a lot of that by keeping him home. In addition to all the things I said earlier about why I thought about keeping him home. So we talked about all of that stuff, and eventually he was like, I don't want to go back. And I was like, okay, I think we're on the same page about this. My daughter is going to be a freshman.
That's so tough.
It was a different conversation with her. She really wanted to go to school. And I was thinking of letting her, which maybe sounds hypocritical, but I thought, like, well, high schoolers, there's no recess. And, like, they'll probably leave masks on in a way that, like, the second graders that my son would be sharing the hall with.
Yeah.
And it just felt a little less risky to me. They weren't even going to send the juniors and seniors into schools, so her school's population would be already cut by 50%. So anyway, it's just a way of saying that, you know, the stuff every parent is weighing is so complicated. But these were definitely conversations. I wasn't sort of like, I'm in charge and here's what's happening. I was, you know, trying to get their feel for it, also knowing that and I am in charge and have to make the call, but
I never
wanted their input.
I never understood the juniors and seniors don't go at all. I thought that was the worst decision I had heard. How could you tell the kids who are seniors, your final year of high school, we're going to let other kids come, but not you guys? I thought, and maybe they had the reason, but I thought it should have been freshmen and seniors and develop like a mentoring thing for them. But let the seniors, if anybody's going to be in school, for goodness sakes, let these poor seniors have their senior year.
It didn't make a lot of sense to me either, especially because last year during the teacher strike, when the CPS teachers were on strike during the, you know, in the fall, I talked to so many juniors and seniors who were in, you know, an absolute panic about not having their teachers to read their college essays and to mentor them through this process. And some of them were first generation, you know, college kids. And so they needed, you know, all sorts of hand-holding and guidance, and I thought, like, well, that's weird to take them totally out of the mix for in-person, but I'm not sure how they arrived at that.
Maybe the feeling was, like you talk about and, like, mentions in your article about some kids being in tougher areas, maybe they felt the younger kids are most vulnerable, and let's make sure they have a place to go. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah. I did talk to one principal, I'm sorry, assistant principal, just off the record about it, and she said that, you know, part of it is that juniors and seniors are supposed to be, you know, forming kind of college-ready or post-high school-ready habits in terms of, like, you know, time management and being self-sufficient and executive functioning skills that would help them, you know, remote learn and in person without a lot of hand-holding learn in a way that freshmen and sophomores can't. So I guess maybe that was part of it too.
Yeah, that can make sense. So tell me, so 9 weeks, so what is the timeline right now? Does that take us to Thanksgiving or all the way to the holidays?
It's like November 9th, I want to say. It's first quarter, essentially. They said school starts for CPS September 8th, and the first quarter is remote. And then they're going to rethink, you know, revisit the plan for second quarter, which starts around November 9th.
So it's not far away. How fast will they decide? Did they say that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
That I haven't heard.
And so let's put Heidi Stevens in charge of the world for a moment. I know that's not a job that you want, but I'm going to give it to you right now. So what are you doing? Are you saying,
have my campaign slogan.
Good. What is your campaign slogan?
No, I don't have
it. Well, you should get one. I'll order a bumper sticker. We could give them free in the Sunday Tribune.
Yeah, it's a house ad. There's no other ads. It's a house ad with my campaign slogan in there. Did I say that out loud?
Don't worry. Middle of the night. They're never going to know.
Okay.
So I think that what would you do about this? So it's November 9th right now. Would you be going with that? I would be, if it's me, throw me in charge. I'm saying, no, we're not doing the whole first, we're done till the holidays for sure. We're not even bother with it. Make all your planning for this. Here's how it's going to go. So parents know, so teachers know. And I don't know that I wouldn't just say we're going to do the year. I don't know that I don't know why not to just do the whole year. How much better are things going to get even if they announce a vaccine tomorrow?
Right.
Is it even going to be in our hands at Christmas? Are people going to get it by Christmas? If we're going to say, all right, until we decide, okay, COVID is here and we're living with it and we're going to do the absolute best we can, but some people are going to get it and you have to be as responsible as you can. We're going to kick people out if they're not. We're going to be, but school's back open and we're going through it. And there's a deadly thing out there. So if they decide that, then that's one thing. But if we're saying, hey, we have to protect everybody, we can't get this, we're going to shut it down if people do, then I don't know why we're deciding at all to even try to do this year, this school year.
So I would try by semester. The first quarter to me is a joke. I mean, there's no way that it's going to be a remarkably different situation in the beginning of November. And I also think the idea of sending kids back into school 2 weeks before Thanksgiving and 6 weeks before Christmas and all the holidays in which we're all going to see family and hoping to maybe even cross state lines terrifying. Like, I don't think I'd send my kid to school the second week of November and then see my parents at Thanksgiving 2 weeks later. I just don't think I would feel responsible doing that. So I would go by semester. I don't think we're going to be able to wait to get kids back in school until there's a vaccine. Honestly, I don't. I think schools are going to have to reopen before there's a vaccine and before the vaccine, if it exists, is widely distributed. And so it's going to have to be one of those things where public health experts decide on a threshold of, you know, positivity rate or how hospitals are handling it. Or once we see, frankly, I mean, how many stories have you read? I've read 70 gazillion about a school reopening in Indiana, Georgia, you name it, Mississippi. School reopens 2 days later, 116 kids have it, and they're all quarantined. So we're going to see how those kids recover. We're going to see, like, this will be an interesting, tragic, probably couple of months that we'll learn from, not to turn people's lives into, you know, some sort of experiment, but it is
going to be that, and it's going to get to a point where it sort of becomes like, well, wear your seatbelt then. You know, people die in cars all the time. Wear your seatbelt, and let's do the best we can. And unfortunately, it does seem that we're going to end up teetering that way.
Yeah, I think so. So I would do it a semester at a time. And you know, just beg the public's grace and patience and humanity.
That would be a nice thing to have, wouldn't it? If we could all just kind of come together and not care about what everybody's saying. Just, hey, I'll just wear a mask. I'll just be a person that wears a mask, and hopefully in some small way that helps.
Yeah, why not?
I know. Why don't we just do that? I put my seatbelt on. I hate that too, but I do it.
Right. I know that I can't go in a store without shoes and a shirt on. So let me throw a mask on that list and just do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be nice. Well, Heidi, I look forward to someday our grandkids, when they, I tease my kids about it now, that someday when their kids are like, I'm so bored, they're going to be like, you're bored. I lived through a pandemic. We couldn't
pull up a
go
chair. Let me tell you about boredom.
Our kids are going to have the greatest. I went to school uphill, shoeless, and deep snow both ways that we will never have had. Heidi Stevens in the Chicago Tribune. Find her there and online and a great follow on social media. Heidi, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Matt. Great talking to you.
That's our friend Heidi Stevens. You can read her in your Chicago Tribune. There's a lot of new scams going around, or new twists on old scams. Steve Burness from the Better Business Bureau joins us after the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. That's coming up next, right here on 720 WGN.